Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, Carrie Pierce is with us. Carrie is the production manager of Provident Bank Mortgage. They do about $20 million in volume a month. He's been with them 4.5 years and have been in the industry for 28 years. Carrie, welcome back.
Thank you.
We had just begun the discussion about kind of the reining in of loan limits. And what's interesting about that, it's at a time where we just had about a 25% increase in median price. So the loan balances are shrinking and our median prices is going up. And at some point, there's really going to be a hole in the market where we're going to be back to the 2004, 5, and 6 era where the funding of the standard loans or the qualified mortgages won't be anywhere close to the median price. It could be at, 60% of median price. The FHA loan limits at the end of 2013 were changed pretty radically for California. It's probably the most of the rest of the country. Let's talk about the impact that might have had on your business.
Yeah, the biggest drop that we've seen was Riverside, San Bernardino County. And prior to the change, we were able to do a $500,000 loan amount in those counties.
Right.
And with the change, it dropped to 355, 350.
Yes.
That's a pretty significant drop.
Yeah, now, so in a year you had a 30% price increase, you had a 30% loan balance decline.
Right. But, you can argue, Riverside, I don't know, the last thing I saw showed the average home price at around 307. I don't know how accurate that is. But personally, my average loan amount's only about 240. So I don't think too many of my clients would have been affected in Riverside, not the FHA buyers anyway. But where you see people that are going to have a problem are in cities like Chino, Altaloma, where you had a lot of people doing the high balance FHA loans out there that aren't going to be able to do it any longer.
Well, also, doesn't it come into play? Let's say that I had a foreclosure occur in 2010. What's my chance of getting a Fannie Mae loan in 2014?
Fannie Mae requires 7 years on foreclosure.
Right. So that's really where the big difference is that with FHA, it went from 3 years to 1 year. But that's literally the only loan, and I guess I shouldn't say that. If I have a foreclosure 4 years ago and Fannie and Freddie are off the table and I need to borrow $500,000 in Riverside, what are my choices now?
Yeah, you don't have any.
You don't have any?
No.
Okay.
No, because FHA is at 355.
Yeah.
And FHA, their standard limit is 3 years on a foreclosure. They do have the program that came out where if you could prove you had a 20% drop in your income, they would consider you for less than that three-year time span, but you have to be able to document that. And that is a loan that ends up having to go manual underwrite. So not too many people fit that criteria.
Okay, so it sounded a lot better than it when it was actually implemented. It wasn't functional and it wasn't taking a whole lot of people down to the one-year.
Right, because most of those people that let their homes go did it just because they were upside down.
Correct.
Not because they had a drop in income.
Do you see, apparently there's no reason to expect that the 7 years is going to change anytime
Doubtful.
Soon.
Yeah.
So they're still, but FHA then is still 3 years.
Right. Now, there are some exceptions on conventional for short sales. So, for instance, if you had a short sale 2 years ago, and you have 20% to put down, you can get a Fannie Mae loan right now.
Okay. Now, is that more aggressive than it was a year ago?
No, it's the same.
Same, okay.
Yeah, these guidelines, I think, were changed probably within the last 3 to 4 years, where they loosened up a little bit for the people with short sales.
Okay. FHA loan limits, there was a ratio in the past where they were a certain percentage of Fannie and Freddie's limits. And so now you have an FHA loan limit go from 500 to the mid-threes in Riverside. Are they done cutting that, or is this an annual event now until we get back in line with ratios of the past?
It's always been an annual event with FHA and even Fannie Freddie as far as loan limits. And they just reevaluate every year based on median home price, and that's how they come up with their limits.
Okay, but that isn't – I understand what you're saying, but this year median home prices exploded – and the loan balance declined. So I'm wondering if that evaluation is outside of this normal scope now and saying we're going to be determined to lower that number irregardless of median price.
You're probably right. I mean, one of the problems was FHA's volume got so heavy that, you know, they were doing way more loans than they wanted to do.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I mean, I go back to, I think it was somewhere around 98 when the 80-20 loans became really popular. Back then, my FHA volume fell to negligible amounts, you know, 1 or 2% of production, when it's typically at least 30 to 40% of my volume.
Right, but that didn't turn out necessarily to be too healthy either.
No, exactly, because, you know, obviously the 80-20 loan was an animal in itself, and that caused a whole lot of problems that led to the crash.
Have you heard any advertisements from other lenders that you think, oh, here we go again?
I don't think we'll see the same problems going forward, only because, you know, everything's full dock now. We have the QM that's kicking in that's not going to allow the stated incomes or the interest onlys or any of that. So I think it's going to be difficult going forward because those creative financing products aren't going to be there.
Well, if they're profitable, why wouldn't they be there? In other words, if you we had talked before, there were some stated income loans that made perfect sense and performed very well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were a very high-performing product, but they're going to have to repeal QM for those things to come back.
Well, or they have to be funded outside of that umbrella.
Right.
Okay. Well, I would think that somebody's going to look at that space and go, well, that's too good to pass up.
Yeah, and it could create a huge, you know, monopoly for somebody.
Exactly. Because, I mean, the first person there is going to be inundated with good loans.
Right. It's funny because one of the guys, I can't remember his name, but he was one of the guys that was initially involved in drafting the CFPB guidelines and rules. And after he left, they said that he's forming his own company to try to create products for the gap that's coming.
Okay. Well, to me, that makes perfect sense. And I, you know, let's use an example like a BlackRock, who has come up with loans for investors. Let's say, you know, the advertisement basically is if you have a portfolio of $5 million, come to us, and they're, you know, refining it with, you know, just a hybrid product. It's not hard money. It's not, you know, 4%, but it's acceptable. And that's the niche they found. And I guess I assume they're converting that into bonds somehow and selling it that way.
Perhaps, yeah. Are they offering 30-year fix, or are they doing some kind of ARM product on that?
It's not an ARM product, but it's a shorter-term fix, and it's a lot of prepayment in the first few years. You know, it's still better, and it's also available. I mean, let's talk about investor financing. What chance do I have in the conventional world of getting my 11th loan?
Yeah, with us, none.
None.
You know, we're limited to Fannie Freddie guidelines on that, and we do have the multi, you know, finance product where you can have up to 10 financed properties, but beyond that, we can't do it.
Right, and you basically what you're saying, the industry can't do it. It's just not there.
Right.
Unless you go to a conventional type of, not a conventional, a commercial type product where you have almost like a line of credit.
Right.
That type of thing. Is that something you guys do, or is that outside of the scope?
We're not. Well, you know, I take that back. We just did start doing seconds again. It's not really an equity line product, though. It's a fixed rate second, primarily for, you know, filling the gap on purchases, you know, where we're going to have challenges with the loan limits where we can put a second behind it. But ours is conservative. We only go to 80% combined loan to value.
Right. Which, you know, that makes sense, but it's better than not being there at all.
Right.
Which means you just loaned 100% of last year's price, by the way. Right?
Yeah.
Well, there was a time where we would drive around and we would hear an advertisement say, okay, we'll loan you 125% loan to value.
I remember those days.
Right. Well, who was that? Who took that risk on, and why did that make sense? I mean, I'm being honest. Who could fund that?
I know. I mean, I never did that product personally, but I know that loan was out there, and a lot of people took advantage of it.
But really, who would have funded it, and how would they have funded it?
It had to have been a private source, just like the subprime scenario.
Right. I can't imagine there's not some gigantic portfolio, you know, looking at this market going, my gosh, there is a huge hole that's really safe, especially with price aggression, you know, that just keeps getting safer and safer. That just seems like that niche has got to be filled at some point. I guess my concern is, you know, when BlackRock's talking about putting together a fund and it's $5 billion big, all of a sudden you realize that's a drop in the bucket.
Right.
Because in the owner-occupant market, just California goes through $160 billion of sales in a year.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you better have a fund that's a lot bigger than what we're talking about.
It's going to have to be huge, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, it seems to me that's got to be coming. Wells Fargo read an article that they participated in last week, and they said that they thought that the type of financing we're talking about that's not under the umbrella of qualified mortgage, which would be 40% of the market at some point, which is light years away from where we are right now.
Yeah.
What percentage of your guys' business falls under that umbrella, qualified mortgage?
Probably 80%, because we don't do that much jumbo in this market.
Okay. And
it might even be as high as 90%.
Okay. When does jumbo start officially? Is it after?
Well, for Riverside, San Bernardino counties, it's anything over 417.
Well, that's, yeah, you're still under, you can still be Fannie and Freddie, but it's their jumbo.
No, for Riverside, San Bernardino, once you pass 417, you're jumbo.
Oh, they don't have that product at all.
We don't have the high balance like Orange and LA do.
Right. And that not only affects single families, that affects 2 to 3 and 4 units, right? All those limits went down as well.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Mortgage-backed securities, does that product enter in anything that you guys do or anyone else you know? Is that a viable exit plan at this point for loans?
I think Wall Street still is doing that. I mean, we don't get involved with that at Provident. I mean, we're selling off loans, you know, loan by loan to Chase, or we might do a pool of, you know, $2 million, $5 million, something like that. But they end up pooling them, selling them off in the secondary market, or warehousing them and putting them in the portfolio.
Okay. Help me out with that sequence. Chase buys $2.5 million worth of loans from you, and you said pools them, perhaps?
Well, we would pool, you know, a group of loans together,
right,
and sell them, you know, a $5 million pool, let's say, that has maybe 30 or 40 loans in it. And, you know, it's up to them on whether they want to put it on their books or do, like you said, and try to put a security together and sell it to Wall Street.
Okay. But some of that is going on?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And now once they have that gone, then I guess I'm just trying to figure out the sequence. There's more available room on their credit line or whatever to participate more?
Right. Once they get rid of that block, then they've got money freed up to go back out and put it out there again.
Okay. So that's, you know, since back in, say, 2006, that was a pretty big percentage of what was going on. Everybody was being able to get off what they were creating.
Right.
And so that's why the demand kept on coming back saying we need more stuff because we don't have what we just created.
Right, right.
Okay.
But then you have the flip side of the coin where New Century, you know, they took $8 billion to market and the market said, we're not buying it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Boom. It obviously had an ending and it ended for everybody inside of a very tight time frame, right?
Right, right. It seemed like overnight. I mean, within a 2-week time span, there were several subprime companies that started going down and New Century was just the first.
Yeah, there was a website that was actually created, and I forget the term, but it was basically counting the number of lenders that were gone.
Oh, I remember that list, and it was crazy. You know, big names on that list.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, in a stretch, I think it was 2000, was it 7 or 8, where all of a sudden Fannie and Freddie got bailed out, and Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. I mean, those were days where I was watching the morning news with pretty great intensity, watching everything that we were familiar with come down.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. And actually, right now, they're trying. Well, I mean, there's rumors that, you know, the government wants to get rid of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And I shudder to think what will happen if that happens.
You know, we did a presentation to them years ago now, probably 2011. And we were talking to pretty high-end people. And I've talked to Sean O'Toole about his feeling about that day. And I definitely felt that all of those people felt that in 10 years they would not have a job.
It's kind of crazy because you look at how profitable they were prior to the crash. Now, granted, through the crash, they had to get the bailout, but they've since paid back all that money and have had record profits the last couple of years.
Exactly.
So they are hugely profitable.
Right. But
you know, why would you want to get rid of that?
I completely agree. Who's in charge of this thing?
I know.
I mean, who's making these decisions? Because, okay, we figured out you're not supposed to loan to people that don't have any honest statement on their loan app. Okay, we figured that one out now. If we should have known it before, but we learned the lesson.
Right.
So, but there are some things that you can do. And what they're doing now, obviously, we're probably creating the most ridiculously safe loans in the last 2 or 3 years in history.
Yeah.
And they're making tons of money. Yeah. Why would you pull the plug on that industry? Because when you do that, you know, what's interesting is there's a big hole in our marketplace right now, or coming up anyway, for new construction, because we're not creating any subdivisions in Riverside. And I think part of it is, I think these big builders are looking at going, okay, well, how are we going to have funding for first-time buyers?
Right.
If all this stuff starts changing and headed down in amounts and all that, I just don't think they feel confident enough to be aggressive.
Well, what's interesting is, I mean, Griffin Homes, you know who they are.
Yeah, sure.
Big home builder.
Yeah.
They shifted gears with the crash and started buying flips.
Well, yeah, they bought it. They're probably the biggest, if not, you know, in the top three of trustee sale buyers in all the local counties.
60 to 80 sales a month.
Right.
And we're lucky enough to participate in a small percentage of that because we got in with them about 2 years ago to where we're able to, you know, win some of that business, you know, when they resell them. But 60 to 80 flips a month is an enormous amount.
Yeah, that's a lot of volume. Are you saying that outpaced anything that they could construct?
Well, I mean, obviously they could make more money with less risk doing the flips than they could going out and buying land and putting the projects together.
Yeah, that's the thing about a flip is that you sort of have a containment in time frame. You say, okay, I'm buying it today and I plan to exit in at least in 6 months. I have that window to worry about. When you do a land project, you're out 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
So that's interesting. So they would be a player that must just may say, the heck with the other, we're doing just fine with this.
What's interesting now is we're hearing that they're just now considering jumping back into the new home market.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I think they're going to ride out the flip train as long as they can, but they do see light at the end of the tunnel for new home construction. And, you know, we've heard rumors that they've got a project coming online here in the next 12 months over, I think, in Yucaipa, Cala Mesa area.
What's interesting about that, we talked to John Burns, who is a consultant for builders and for some hedge funds, and I was really just asking him, what's the mood of the builder? He said, well, basically what happened is the land prices were on sale for a while, and then all of a sudden they literally went back in, say, an 18-month period to 2006 price.
Wow.
So land cost is as high as it's ever been. And literally doesn't pencil until you get back to a price that's 0506.
Yeah.
So.
And what is that median price?
600
like
grand. No. 600 in California. I don't know where it is specifically in Riverside.
Wow.
But we're at 4.25. So that's why there's no subdivision creation. You're still a ways away from something penciling unless you have an existing lot that you got on sale.
Right.
But if you have to take a hill and make it some lots, you've got a ways to go in price, and then you have a longer journey in time probably than ever before.
Right, and they've gotten stung in the past, so I'm sure they're shy about doing it again.
Well, oddly enough, that's not typical of a builder. Most of the time, they're very aggressive early, and they stay aggressive until somebody tells them no one wants your stuff, and that's why they have problems. But this time, the land price is just preventing them. Whoever owns the land thinks very highly of it very quickly.
Yeah.
And so that's what's been an issue.
One of the things that scares me is your prediction of, you know, the median price climbing to that 600 number and rates climbing to, you know, close to 6% or maybe higher. Then what's going to happen to the market?
Well, you know, it'd be nice if the interest rates participated in getting to that ending point, which is basically the payment's too high for people to qualify. What you don't want to have happen is go to 600 grand on the back of 4%.
Right.
Because, you know,
it's just creating another animal.
Well, you're creating a disaster because you can't always have 4% mortgage rates. In our history, that's not been typical. When you came in the market, 85, what was it, 10% or less?
No, 12.5 when 12? I first got into the business.
Okay, 12.5, and I had borrowed money at 17.5 in 81.
Wow.
So, you know, to have a 4% mortgage, you know, we think only because of recent history, oh, well, 4.5, that's terrible.
Yeah, we're spoiled. I mean, May, I tracked it. We bottomed out in May at around 3.25 on FHA and about 3 3/8 on conventional, and we're up a full percent from May 1st.
Right. And, you know, prices went up during that interest rate. Well, that's interesting. A lot of price gain was happening in the first 6 or 7 months, and then it's kind of calmed down since then. I can tell you from our own experience that all of a sudden, I think you're going to get really busy again if you haven't been, because the aggression of people wanting to buy our homes available has changed since the first a lot.
Our volume has fallen off a bit over the last, you know, say 4 to 6 months. But what we experienced a couple years ago was a mass influx of buyers and too much competition. They couldn't get offers accepted. Some of these buyers were out there offering on 30 properties and still not getting one accepted.
Right. So I don't think their needs were met. I think that they just shelved their search. And there were so many cash buyers at those price levels that they just got pushed out of the market. But I still think they want to own a house.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be more the typical escrow this year, is you're selling it to an owner occupant that didn't get their needs fulfilled last time.
We can only hope.
Our gifts are still allowed with FHA. Is that correct?
Correct, and even on conventional. It's just conventional, if you're 5%, well, let's put it this way. If you're less than 20% down on a conventional loan, you have to have 5% of your own money prior to any gifts.
Okay.
If it's 20% or more down, the whole thing can be gift. FHA has a totally different attitude, and they allow 100% gift.
And that includes closing costs, too? Or just,
correct.
Okay. Now, they used to have companies that were set up for that.
Yeah, the American Dream and Nehemiah, all
right.
Those went away.
Okay, and those are no longer allowed, so it has to be a relative.
Right.
Okay. Simultaneous to a gift, can you have a co-qualifying, like somebody in your family helps you qualify?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And they, even on conventional, you know, we've got parents that are co-signing for kids, and Freddie Mac has a program where they do what they call a blended ratio, where they put all the income of the family and all the debts in one big pot, and then they run the ratios. Fannie Mae doesn't do it that way. They want the occupying borrower to qualify at 35-43 on their own income.
Okay.
And that defeats the whole purpose of having a co-signer.
Exactly. Okay. What about FICO score requirements? We got about a minute and a half now. For FHA?
FHA minimum 620 for Provident. There are lenders that go down to 580, First Mortgage, and a few others. But we have a 620 threshold with our investors. And then on the flip side, on conventional, if it's 20% down, you can go down to 620. 10% down, probably got to be closer to 660 because you've got to get the mortgage insurance approval.
Right.
And the lower the credit score, the higher the rate's going to be because of the pricing add-ons.
Okay. So you have that going on too. You have a rate, and then if they don't have enough down payment, it changes the rate or just becomes unavailable. But every time there's a credit score decline, there's a more charge for that loan. Is that how it works?
Right.
Okay. I know the percentages are so radically different. There was a chart that I looked at FHA put out of who they were loaning to in, say, 2008, and something like 60% or 70% of FHA's business was lent to under say 600 at that time.
Wow.
And now it's something like 20%.
Yeah, I got to believe that number is gone way up as far as the higher FICO scores, because you know, most of our buyers are probably falling, as far as FHA, between the 660 and 700 range.
Right.
You know, and we still do several that are over 720, so.
Okay. Carrie, we've run out of time. I really appreciate you joining us and clarifying a little bit of what we're up against. And it sounds like we're still going to be able to fund houses, so that's okay.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.